Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back to another podcast. And we know we are a bit late, but yeah, the wait is all worth it. On this podcast, we'll be talking about internet and censorship. So without any further ado, let's begin.
Hey guys, so this is Arjun. And yeah, it really feels good to come back again and do a podcast. You know, the last GayaCast episode received very great reviews and feedback. So yeah, this time we're going
We literally hit like 100 views on the first podcast. Like, that's not seen. I'm sure that's not seen.
From the audience.
Audience. Guys, you're awesome. Yeah, go ahead.
So, internet censorship. When we talk about it, the only thing that comes to our mind is that there's something on the internet, a government or an individual does not like it, and it is removed or redacted. But guys, is that so? Tell me honestly, is that so according to you?
All right. So like everything, right? It's almost like a textbook definition, which is like, you know, as you said right now, but actually it's way too complex because liking or disliking something is very subjective to the place, to the time, and, you know, probably the topic you're talking about. Yeah. I guess we should move on to Theria's view now.
Yeah. Basically about internet censorship is that someone will feel that this topic is too sensitive for the general public to know. It depends on their location. So for example, in another country, one topic can be viewed in India, but not in the other country. It depends that if the topic is sensitive or not, but it always depends on the location and the people.
Agreed. What about Aman? What do you feel?
I think that internet censorship is usually used to control or suppress things that can be accessed by a lot of people, and it's used usually to like censor the areas that might be sensitive enough or may instigate violence or hate. So there might be two uses of it. We'll discuss that ahead in the podcast.
Interesting. But you know, I had one question to you, Aman, because the entire point of, you know, instigating violence and all, it completely lies upon the fact how the people interpret a certain, you know, statement. If they interpret it in a very simple way, and if the intent of that person was to offend them, it's almost like, you know, you never know when someone gets offended and, you know, violence is caused. So do you think internet censorship might as well, you know, not work in some cases because people don't expect them to be violent and they suddenly become?
Well, it's 2020, of course.
Right. Internet censorship, I think that in 2020, people have started becoming a bit more mature. So like people before used to get like you could say offended at a very small statements. Nowadays they don't, and I guess that this cyber boost that because of the COVID has helped us a lot, because we don't get offended really easily, but still the social media, big social media handles are a big influencer in the people perceive it.
But see, this is also the thing. Before this, the whole point of internet censorship was to censor stuff that can be either sensitive or either stuff that can lead to violence, right? But if you look at it objectively as of now, there is more stuff censored that will not actually cause violence than stuff that actually then in the future causes violence, right? So, if you take... there are several community guidelines. If you go on Tumblr, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and in the past we have seen that internet censorship and the whole concept of cancel culture that apparently now we're also discussing. We see that, we see that most things that are not meant to be offensive are taken as, you know, because taken as meant to be offensive because people want to be offended by something. They want something that they can talk about. And that is the only reason why such things are then taken forward and they proliferate into life, actual, in real life events.
About Aman said, that we are getting a cyber boost of sorts. Well, some people are becoming more tolerant to the opinions of other people and the information that is available across the internet. But while also, in turn, there is also a rise in people which may get offended. Means like both the sides are going up, like the tolerance and the ones who are getting hurt by the information.
It's almost like... Yeah, it's almost so like that, people have a lot of time right now. People have immense amounts of time right now. So it's upon them, right? How they consume, you know, how they actually interpret the information. It's all about context. Like if you know a context of anything, there's very slight chance that you would react in a polar manner, right? Because as we said in the last podcast, which is a good callback, which is the truth is very boring. And, you know, there's no possibility of a polar reaction most of the time.
Yes, people are too lazy to find the context.
Agreed. Yeah, Aman, you're saying something.
Yeah, I was saying that the topic of tolerance was bought. So there was a very like the paradox of tolerance given by Karl Popper. He stated that in a society where there is unlimited tolerance, eventually the intolerant will defeat the tolerant people. And therefore, to keep the society from turning into this disaster, you need to intolerate the intolerance of others.
So hey, you need to simplify that. You need to simplify a lot.
Yeah, that's why it's a paradox. So the thing is that if I quote what he exactly said, I don't remember actually the quote. I'll just tell him what it means. So he said that the society cannot be unlimitedly tolerant. Yes, so that's the reason you need to not tolerate the intolerance of others. I'll explain with an example. So if I state a point of view which you don't like and you do not tolerate, I need to claim my right of not tolerating your intolerance.
So basically you are saying that if someone has a wrong point or basically against your point, so basically that should spark a debate in the society. There shouldn't be quietness in the
like it was exactly in meaning of tolerance. So I think that the word tolerance was taken a bit too far. Tolerance, so if you don't tolerate the point I speak, then I have the right to say that you are intolerant, and in saying so I become an intolerant. But that type of intolerance is allowed.
It's almost like the word judgmental, right? When people say that you're judgmental, that means at least, you know, even you are judgmental. It's a very, you know, it's a very, very, you know, complex scenario, to be honest, to categorize someone as tolerant, intolerant. But see, I guess the meaning of what he said, see, according to me, it is like that. You can correct me if I'm wrong, that there should be, you know, peaceful discourse in the society wherever needed.
Yes. See, what I inferred from the statement, the quote that he gave, I'm not any kind of philosopher, but what I understood was ki you cannot tolerate stuff that is meant to instigate you. You cannot tolerate someone calling out your calling out your religion or calling out your community and saying stuff like making really unironically offensive jokes, right? So that is, I mean, if you talk about in terms of sense of humor, there's irony and there is jokes that don't have irony and are plainly unironically delivered. And in that case, I guess the public is right to be infuriated because there is a certain way of delivery of a joke. So if you, I would really suggest the general public, I mean, even people who do not, go into several philosophical forums, right? You can check out Matthew Patrick, Matt Pat on Game Theory. He's on YouTube if you're watching on YouTube, right? So he talked about how PewDiePie's comedy and bad delivery, okay, in certain ways of jokes, right? So the whole anti-Semitic thing happened, right? You might remember.
Yeah.
Right. So the whole problem was that it was a joke and the public knew it was a joke, but the way it was delivered, it simply did not look like a joke. I mean, okay. If you know the context, it would look like a joke, but you did not know the context, which is why you thought that, okay, PewDiePie is now anti-Semitic, right?
And yeah, it's completely based on concept.
I inferred from the quote was, basically, let's take this in a case of a debate. Basically, one person is arguing for point and against point. So basically, the against guy says that, no, you can't do this. No, I don't like it and I hate it and this is bad or something like that. That is negatively pointing out the for guy. So basically, I think that by this quote, I infer that the other guy shouldn't be tolerant for that person. the guy should also become intolerant in order to have a debate and a proper functioning. So basically this can be used in the society. That's what I inferred.
Yeah. All right. So if I had a few, also, you know, questions for Aryan
here. I think I should add something.
Yeah,
see, I also understand this. The society must be intolerant of tolerance. Now let's take it back to what we're discussing, internet censorship, right? What can a society tolerate when it comes to internet censorship? As you know, in Saudi Arabia or in the Middle East as general, okay, there are several things that the general public itself cannot tolerate, which is why the government also agrees the government also agrees that this stuff should be censored out from the government.
It's based on a very simple concept, right? It's the concept of reality. So for example, right now, if you guys won't be able to see this because you guys are listening to it, but I'm holding a transparent glass right now. If I come out and say this is a red glass, and enough people agree with me that this is actually a red glass and not a transparent glass, it actually becomes a red glass for the public. It becomes the reality for them. And it's the same thing, right? If the entire public believes that this is offensive, then you know, it almost becomes a reality in that kind of a country that this is actually offensive, and therefore the rule is formed for the general public to be happy, because most of the times the state actually, you know, it aims for maximum happiness of the people, and in this case, which
not exactly happiness, I would say,
like not happiness, but like offense and
minimalistic,
you know,
outrage, like the outrage probably should be minimal.
Yes, they should. They try to keep things in order as much as possible by censoring the information that may throw them out of order.
Right. I'd like to interrupt in between. We guys have just strayed a bit from the topic, so we'll come back to it. Internet censorship in some cases is necessary and is a very good thing, because sometimes there is fake news or there's some things that are spreading around which shouldn't be. And in that case, censorship is one of the best ways to control or suppress that type of information. But the use of it has become synonymous with the reputation going down. So if a person has his reputation going down, his offense, like he takes offense to it. So there was a difference between the reputation going down and the offensiveness of a statement. And now it's becoming increasingly synonymous. So if your reputation goes down, you're offended, which isn't usually the case. It might not always be the case.
What I think of your statement, the government or... could you repeat it? Apologies. Okay.
Yeah.
You said the people that censorship has to be approached to... cut down on fake news. But if you check, not even Indian news channels which are broadcasted on TV, right? Even if you check the internet, the press can actually freely post anything, even as an opinion, so as to spread their ideology, okay? And the general public is not as, smart, even... that may have people in our audience, right? The general public is not as smart to understand when something is an opinion and when something is presented as a fact, right?
Agreed.
You may present your opinion as a fact, and basically that is what, that is a part of what the freedom of press stands for, that a person should be able to express their opinion, not as a fact per se, but a person should be able to express their opinion. And in order to sway the opinion of people into their side, often these opinions are portrayed as facts, even though they might not be, right? So the problem here is not just that censorship is too suppressive, it is also that it is not suppressive in places that it should be.
See, it's all based on how someone puts it in their words, right? So if there is something like maybe in a statement, that instigates a feeling that this person is not sure, so that the people will literally just turn off. They'll be like, why would I listen to him if he's not sure about his statement? So people put in, the words which, instigate, that, let the people know that it is actually a fact. With, words like, for example, I'm not getting that word. For example, this is a fact. When I say this is actually a fact. You put forth an affirmative statement. But if I say maybe this is a fact, you won't agree with me that much. right?
Like you assert.
So it's all based on interpretation. It's all based on context, and you know that's why even we said this in the previous podcast, right? That news was meant to be very boring, but it is not. It's interesting. That's why it's wrong. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So even now that we're coming to news as discussing censorship as a whole, mm-hmm. let's talk about stuff that has been coming on news for a few days in recent past, all right? Even if we might not get into the specifics of it, can we all agree that at times the media seems to have a kind of, biased opinion about stuff, and all kinds of media, even the side that...
Yes.
That even the side that is siding with the apparent victim, and even the side that is saying that the quote apparent victim is actually the culprit themselves. So, I mean, there's no middle ground here, right?
Well, works on the basis of for and against, whichever case you may see.
The funny thing is, you cannot have a neutral opinion. When you see something happening, your brain has subconsciously made a decision already that you are literally for one side or for another. Not like completely, but if you can't mark it on a scale to 1 to 10, but you are at least like somewhere or the other leaning to one of the sides, and that instigates a bias because of that. You know, a radical may turn out to be biased.
There's another reason why people don't prefer to be neutral. There's a quote, I don't remember by whom, but it said that. If you're neutral in times of war, you have failed. If you're neutral in any situation, you have failed your duty, because it never helps the oppressor. It always helps the oppressor, not the oppressed. So which basically means that if you stand for anything, like if you're neutral in a subject or a topic, so you are indirectly helping the person who committed the crime or is found guilty later.
I find this a very general statement. This is almost like a very general statement. It will definitely vary from, you know, condition to condition, right? And
it's the statement that is like
used for war. I guess it's only for war and probably crimes, right?
It wasn't for war. That's what I said, that these statements like these are making people shift their ideologies. These statements did not always hold true for all situations.
But in this quote, we are saying the word oppressed and oppressors, basically. Yeah. But in the general society, a person will decide which side is the oppressed and the oppressor.
It's not very clear.
Let's get the context of the statement here, right? This was said by Desmond Tutu. He is an anti-apartheid and human rights activist. The quote saying that if a person is neutral, he is indirectly siding with the oppressor. Context here applies that if a person is not fighting against injustice, then simply becoming the viewer of it and spectator, right? And they are not saying anything. That means they are indirectly siding with the oppressor. And again, it brings out the topic that you need to know the context of when such stuff is said. All right. There is apartheid, but I don't want to choose a side in that. Or there is systemic discrimination in people, but considering that I do not have a strong opinion in society, I will not make a statement.
Well, people think that if this is happening, just let it happen. It isn't affecting me. But people have that ideology fixed in them.
See, that's stupid. If you look at it from that perspective, it may seem fair, right? If for example, something doesn't affect you, less risk for them, right? So if something doesn't affect you, it's a very slight chance that you'd care about it, right? Because it's not affecting you. You'll just, you know, continue doing your work and not probably, you know, invest your hours to help someone, you know, who is not affecting you, right?
Not put in your effort, right?
Because it may seem fair from their ideology because they don't know what's actually happening. But if someone tries to explain them, like, what's actually the context about it, then, you know, there might be some action that would take place. And literally, that's why, right? If, for example, this quote as well, right? We didn't know that he was an anti-apartheid activists, yeah, and we're doing exactly. The context. So that's a, I thought it was a general statement, and hence people, if people hear this general statement and if they take it too seriously, then they'll start reacting at a very, you know, at every single thing, and that might instigate violence.
Yeah,
but
so,
if they know what is the context, they might not.
We came to this court things in the court. So what happens is that a lot of people who write these quotes, write them in their perspective according to the ideas that have influenced them. And people, the people who read about them do not understand the context. And that usually misleads. Like, this quote is not wrong exactly, but because it was written in a different context and people can just interpret it in another way, which might not be helpful or which might remove the original purpose of the meaning of the purpose.
Again, you need to know the context for everything. And this is honestly, in any case, not a wrong statement, right? In any case, you cannot consider to this to be a wrong statement, because it correctly says that in a case of an oppressed and an oppressor, if you choose neither side, or if you don't support the, if you simply remain neutral, you are indirectly supporting the oppressor in its deeds. And if I would like to bring about, again, I would like to bring a pop culture reference, not pop culture per se, but there's this movie called Yes Man. It has Jim Carrey in it. And the movie basically said that there's a man who's very sad. He has a sad life. And then he attends a seminar where he is taught to say yes to everything. All right. And when he starts saying yes to everything, his life changes. But at the same time, at a certain point, it deteriorates again. And then he meets the person who taught him this. And then he realizes that, oh, okay, I don't need to say yes to everything at that moment. It was only so that that I could get used to agreeing to stuff. I could get used to saying yes to everything. And then I can start analyzing situations and going by yes or no. So that is again basically what it means here, is that you need to know, even if you have an ideology, you need to understand that everything needs to be analyzed, because any side can have a different perspective, and a perspective at times may be or definitely be more right at points of time.
And even if you consider that quote, right, because it's like supporting, you know, not supporting the oppressor, something like that, right? But, you know, support can be different for different people. For example, for some people, support can be just, you know, praying for them. But for some other people, support can be helping them out, actually.
Yes,
like
it's the
going
amount
on the
of
period.
Investment they do.
Not like exactly, but like, see.
But something like that, something like that.
Something like that, right? Because everybody, see, they might be leaning towards, you know, helping those people's side, leaning towards the good side. But if they don't show it, how does that even affect the situation, right? That decisions might change in the future. But
speaking about neutrality, basically what happens is a person at the beginning will feel that he or she may be neutral. But after a while, you may read some other information that is available that tips the scale to the other side. So basically, that's where internet censorship plays a role. That basically, in some cases, the censorship may be in such way that it may tip you to the other side. Basically, it will push you to the polar extreme, while the intention may not may be like that, but it can be interpreted as that.
Agreed, right? It's all based on how the public might react on that situation, or probably is reacting on that situation. And yes, sometimes internet censorship is required, where some inappropriate content is on some, you know, some platform where it shouldn't be, then it completely makes sense there. But if it comes to something like a joke or something which requires a lot of context and a lot of analyzing behind it, then, you know, in the people have to think about it a bit more before reacting.
Right. Yep. I mean, if you look at it, there's several songs that at one point of time were completely all right to sing out loud or even, you know, listen to. Particularly, I'm talking about Pumped Up Kicks. You guys know about it. Right?
Yeah,
so, it's a pretty big controversy in the United States.
It's very controversial. And but again, you think about it right now and you feel a bit, you know, scared about it, because this is an actual thing that has been happening since a long time right now in 2020. But at that point of time, it did not have the same kind of pretext or pretense, right? And because of which it was completely all right to blast on your speakers, right?
Mm.
even if there's you know, there's this band called Panic at the Disco, their first album, it had a very, I mean, in today's time you can consider it very controversial. It's the name of the song is called "The Only Difference Between Suicide and Martyrdom is the press." Is the press. So I mean,
all right.
It's portrayed.
Yeah, it's how it's portrayed. I mean, I don't want to call out anything with current reference, but yeah, you get it, right? I'll just pull out the name of the song. Give me a minute. All right. So basically, again, this comes to tolerance and censorship. The only thing that can be censored at one point of time is when you consider that at that point of time, it is very sensitive, and in the future or in the past, it may not have been. So, you know, countries basically declassify their documents, right, at one point of time, because they consider it is no more sensitive to the topic. And that is the same thing that applies. And I guess we can also talk about, since we're bringing about the idea of, or the topic of documents being declassified or whistles being blown, right? We have, Aman has done very good research about this topic. So Aman, you can go ahead about it.
We were going to talk about the American whistleblower named Edward Snowden. He's quite famous, if you know about it. Many people call him a hero. Many people call him a traitor. But we won't give any judgment on whether he was a hero or a was a hero or a villain. We'll just move on with the facts. So he copied and leaked highly classified information from the National Security Agency, the NSA, in 2013. And he was a CIA employee and subcontractor. So his obviously the leak from the NSA revealed some disclosures that numerous global surveillance programs were being run by the NSA, and people were not happy when they found out that their privacy was not private. And obviously this guy was endangered after this. He was charged with there were some laws against which he was charged about betrayal to the espionage or something. And therefore we came to this in the cyber censorship topic, because there is a fact I would like to speak. I'm not completely sure of its validity, but I think that he had spoken about it. The German chancellor at the time had a tap on her phone from the NSA. And obviously the validity of this cannot be determined, because there's no close source that would find this out. But I think that Edward Snowden had spoken about this. And so the thing is that the surveillance and the privacy of the people is not in the hands of the companies there. Then there's the Cambridge Analytica case. And there are loads and loads of cybersecurity cases.
Literally speaking about privacy and cyber security, the data is never protected, right? Because when you put something out on the internet,
false sense of belief that that we are safe and protected, and internet is a calm place where you have your private bubble. Well, you don't.
You can't have a private bubble, because the funny thing about internet is, internet was meant to be connected. And when you put a firewall or some barrier in the connection, it can be easily broken if enough forces. Yeah, exactly, right? And people say that if you put something on the internet, it stays forever. That's why this thing about internet privacy, it's sort of a hoax to me. What about you guys? What do you feel?
Yeah, according to me, there's no such thing as privacy on internet, of course. Once you connect to it, basically your information goes there. And you receive information from there. But from your side, a lot of things that you are not aware of are sent to different networks. We are given sense of assurance through privacy policies and other things. But according to me, there is no such thing as internet privacy.
I mean, even if the privacy policy exists, does anybody really read the terms and conditions?
It has 2-3 pages long, literally no one reads it.
And they are subject to change without information. That's the best.
That is true. Yep. You know what? If you look at it, at several points of time when there are, when in a lawsuit, right, a company needs to, or even any entity wants to, distort the ideas of the opposing party, what they do in terms of proof, they send loads and loads of proof. And through that, when going through all of that, the important points are missed out. So it's like when you have to send, even in a mass order, right? In a mass order, if there are 500 pens and out of them, three are very bad, but because it is a part of that 500, you don't realize that it has happened. Same way, the your identity, your search results, or even what you search, they are actually recorded. Because I'll give you my personal experience.
Yep.
I do not have any kinds of accounts on my laptop, all right, which account of my parents, right? But what happened was, is that I was searching for, we are doing this podcast. So I was searching for mics, and I did that on my personal Amazon ID. But 3 days later, I go on Amazon, which is of my father, or from my father's account. And what I see is that he has received about 3 to 4 mic suggestions, like professional mics that I cannot even afford. Because, this is such a small undertaking. But those things are being pushed such that you look at it and you want to buy it. And
see, it's probably connected. And,
it is definitely connected.
See, because if you that's called retargeting. And retargeting can happen between various devices and various accounts in the same locality, right? So
the geotag, actually.
Yeah, it's actually, I guess that's pretty much okay, because the retargeting system works like that, exactly like that, because in that geotag, you searched about mics few probably hours ago, or probably days ago, but it might show up on some other person's account in that area. And even if the addresses are same, and if you're using the same internet and stuff, there's a very high chance that retargeting can take place. So I don't see a problem in that, but yeah, retargeting is scary sometimes. Even I've experienced it.
Yeah, even if you
have, actually.
Everyone has
experience.
Yeah,
the case of this target pushing baby products to a father. Have you guys heard about that?
No,
I'm not. But I can give you a very, very weird experience, right? Because I'll tell you. I made a video on some kind of a scam that was running on social media. All right, I won't take the name and stuff because I got calls apparently. So yeah, so. I made a video on that, and I had to research about it, and I used like completely incognito tabs, right? And suddenly, out of nowhere, I didn't even search it on Instagram that much, right? Out of nowhere, I was shown ads about that kind of a scam, right? That kind of scam means that, when you apply to that kind of a deal or that kind of a, what's that called, scheme, then I may fall into that scam. I'm not giving specifications because, obviously, I was getting those kind of, advertisements where I was, sort of opposing it on my video. It's so scary sometimes, but yeah, it's pretty much it. Like,
there's retargeting no such thing as privacy, as a matter of fact. Even Edward Snowden said that. And he's playing Fortnite, and the US government does know his ID and everything, his location. But thankfully, he's in Moscow, so he's safe from jurisdiction until the time Moscow has given him asylum. Now he also stated that there were some good people who wanted privacy as a fundamental right, who are working hard towards projects which like ensure or at least have an idea of cyber security. So there are two of them. One of them is the Tor project, which is very famous. And yeah, the second one is HTTPS everywhere. So it basically means that any site which is not HTTPS won't load on your computer if you have that extension attached on your PC. So HTTPS secured is usually the way when like the thing you search cannot be shown to your ISP. That's what HTTPS is. So when sites don't work, when they don't open on your PC saying that there's just some problem has been encountered or something, then you might just use HTTPS instead of HTTP. It's a secured server. HTTPS means secured.
God, it's almost like, you know, so transfer between the client and server. You just make it more secure. I'm not sure about the ISP thingy, but
yeah
it's basically sending information data between the client and server. It's more secure. It's almost like end-to-end encryption in most of the, you know, social media apps.
Well,
it's almost like that.
Encryption is also kind of a myth, you know, to be honest.
I haven't studied that much about it.
Give a fact about one of, if we came to the topic of cybersecurity as a whole, the emails that you sent are encrypted using 64 and 128 bit passwords. So there are 128 or 64 characters in a normal standard mail. And the thing with this is that you can crack 64 or 128 bit passwords within 2 minutes. So there's a
middleman attack.
It's actually the brute force attack. The probability.
I'll tell you what's that. So for example, you're sending an email to me, and there's someone, for example, there is like, I want to ruin everything, and he comes in and he, you know, hacks some. He does the brute force attack, and he's almost like the middleman in that situation. If you send hi, and I get an offensive message from him, he'll just edit it out and he'll send that message to me. It's something like that. It's called the middleman attack. That's how it, you know, as you said, the brute force in email is actually used. The 64-bit encryption. It's a very common attack, to be honest. That's, you know, one of the most commonly seen attacks in the corporate world, if you ever notice.
For those of you who don't know what brute force is, I'll explain it to very basically. So if you have a 4-bit password and you have 4 characters, so there are 16 probabilities of what the password might be, depending on the position and everything. So the brute force, what it does is it basically tries out every possibility until the lock opens. That's what brute force is. Now, 64-bit passwords would mean a lot of probabilities. I think it might be greater. It's 64 square, but I'm not sure of it. So
I guess it's 2n square. It's 2n square.
Okay, yeah. So probably. Which means there's a lot of probabilities of guessing the numbers. So this is how brute force works. But the thing with this is that the computers now have advanced so much that you can crack 64-bit and 128-bit passwords within two minutes or so.
For example, if this was too complex for you, for example, it's a one-digit password and it's a numerical password, so it can't be, you know, it can't be a two-digit password. It'll be just between 0 to 9. The computer will just first input 0. It'll be like, no, it doesn't work. Then 1. If it doesn't work, 3. If it works, then yeah, it's pretty much, you know, open for that. If you simplify it to the, you know, lowest. Yeah, go ahead.
So see, we have right now we discussed about how the how our security and privacy basically on internet is a myth. Right. But see, again, it comes to the point where is it really the reason why that we don't have privacy, that censorship can be used to show us what we want to see? So let me bring this example. All right. If you do not have a YouTube account, just an example, of course, everybody has a YouTube account, right? But you have a Gmail, right? And or even a Facebook, let's say Facebook account, right? And on that Facebook account, you specifically follow T-Series, just an example, or a random YouTuber. So will you be able to look at on YouTube stuff that you want to see? Or even if you type in on Google about a channel and you don't even watch the video, you just type, because it has happened to me, I'm giving a personal experience, right? I typed on Google about a random channel. It was Simon Says. Shout out Simon Says. Yeah, so this on this when I searched about this, I didn't watch it initially, right? But Google gathered that I was interested in that particular channel. And so for the next few days, nothing happened. And suddenly, this came up, Simon Says new video came up. I saw not only one, but actually 4 or 5 of his videos on my homepage, right?
That's basically retargeting.
Yeah.
That's retargeting.
Retargeting. Agreed. But just because I have searched about it does not mean that I should be sent. Of course, I have agreed to,
terms. You should. You ideally should.
I looked at the terms and I know that this would happen. I mean, if you look at it, the terms and conditions are severely changed at points of time. And, you know, at times the people who have signed it are not even, notified that terms and conditions have changed.
See, I'll tell you why. See, it's almost like for the general good, right? For example, see, this is how it was meant to be. See, for example, let's say Aman is someone who just wants to listen to songs on YouTube. So if he just keeps on listening to songs, all the recommendations in his homepage will come about songs, because that's basic retargeting. So if at all, for example, a new suggestion comes up, let's say it's a smartphone review, Aman won't click on it, right? And that's why the retargeting, not even, so see that the whole point of getting him a smartphone video shown in the recommendations panel fails, because he won't click on it and there won't be ad revenue generated, blah, 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 blah. And it just fails, right? That's why there's retargeting happening.
Huh. Abhi, now that we're talking about retargeting, and we also brought about the topic of geotagging, all right? Let's take the example of what is happening right now, okay? So apparently, Facebook has been pushing right-wing ideologies, okay? And you may consider, okay, it's just that the majority population of Facebook is, you know, in India, is supporting the right-wing policy. You might say that. We are not either confirming it or denying it. It's just what has been said allegedly, okay?
Yes, it's an allegation, not confirmed or denied by anyone.
Hashtag opinion, guys.
Whatever. But the whole point is that Facebook is promoting one kind of ideology, apparently. But let's look at it objectively. If you follow a person who has that kind of ideology, and you also follow multiple people just like that person, all right, then what Facebook picks up is that whichever person this follows, that person has one common interest, which is A. We'll not name any kind of entity. A. And A is apparently a political party in the right wing. All right. And just because it is that, the Facebook again pushes, Facebook algorithm basically pushes what they want to need, they want you to see, which they think you might be interested in, which is the right wing. Right. Again, at the same time, you see that some people are following a B party, which in some cases is a left-wing party, all right? And for the same, you don't see them being pushed the left-wing posts, all right? Can anybody, just guess why they too will be given right-wing posts? Just a guess.
So that they stay more on that page because there is no more objection to their opinion. Dude, like, just hear me out for a second, right? Because of that, people are not getting the point that their opinion might be wrong. And that's why when they come to know that their opinion is wrong, they turn out to be, you know, giving some polar, you know, completely polar reaction. That's why violence might be instigating, because out of a sudden they come to know, oh my God, my opinion might be wrong, or they might just turn violent at that point of time. If you look at it closely, this might be a case.
I'll just speak about Facebook. So I'll just say the person who runs it, Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO, sorry, not the person who runs it, allegedly does not believe in the Holocaust. So he thinks that nothing like the Holocaust occurred. And due to that, the algorithm does not push posts which are related to Holocaust. That's one example that just popped into my mind.
I don't think so, dude. Because see, the people who might follow the other party.
It was in the congressional hearing of Mark Zuckerberg.
So we can't. I don't think so, dude. Because see, the people who are following the other party might get posts from which are related to the other party, which might, you know, fuel their agenda.
Well, basically, it's the game of propaganda. Like,
it's probably the algorithm doing it everything, and we're just thinking it, oh my God, can Facebook be behind this?
Yeah. Right. So see, what my point was that, when you see that some party, let's take the general example of Rahul Gandhi, okay? Rahul Gandhi, hear me out. It is what I personally have observed, okay? What I have seen is that whenever Rahul Gandhi has to has attended or may have attended a ceremony in a temple, all right, that does not is not seen as much as it is seen when he attends in a mosque. Okay, this is just my opinion and from what I have personally observed. So the whole point is the Congress party, right, it wants to gain traction from that one particular sect or one particular society, and therefore they, you know, push that kind of content just like YouTubers do, right? When YouTubers see one topic trending or one particular group being attracted to your channel, they use that until it completely exhausts and the general public knows about it, right? If you take the topic of pranks, there was a time when there was a huge upsurge of prank videos on YouTube. Even YouTubers who were not pranksters were pranking everyone, right?
To hop on the trend.
Yeah, just took up on the trend because they knew that that trend will pick up and people will watch it. At the same time, we can take the example of this political party, that they know that a group will that one particular group will definitely push that ideology, okay, or definitely take that person to be supporter of one particular ideology and then push that person for further gain of traction. And then it again comes back to what is being pushed on social media. And it is not just what a Facebook algorithm may push or the Instagram algorithm may push. It is what the parties themselves, the accounts, want to push. You know, just like in YouTube, you have the option which video of yours should be introduced when you first come to a channel, right? So like currently on the Gaia project, we have our first topic. Our first podcast as you know, as the first video that comes up, right? So again, it is what you as a party, as the content creator, want the people to watch. And the same thing is that the what one particular group or one particular sect of the society wants you to watch. And at times when this becomes, when this particular sect is the majority, the government decides that to satisfy this majority, in any case, not a specific case, they censor that or push that.
Agreed.
Yep.
It's fueled with corporate agenda. It's fueled with government agenda. It's fueled with every sort of agenda you can think of. Everything is all interconnected.
Yeah, you know,
if you look at it from an overview.
Even if you take marketing or any kind of public outreach, everything has its own agenda, either propaganda or, you know, basically creating hype for your new product.
So, agreed.
Yeah, that's what basically is.
See, for example, I'll give a very, you know, basic one, right? So what do you think? Is advertising propaganda? Or marketing is marketing propaganda? Is advertising propaganda?
Well, somewhat, yes. But
to a certain degree, it is, because you're sort of manipulating someone's decisions, right?
Yeah, I mean,
even though if you're pitching your product, but still, see, if you look at it
that way,
obviously, right? So, if you the very you know, one of the fallacy which is used a lot is the common man fallacy, right? Which is like you try too hard to relate to the person, and that's what most of the advertisements do. To a point, everything seems like literally a huge you know, a small chunk of people controlling a huge chunk of population, if you look at it in that context.
Well, basically, if we look at it, the general people believe in a sort of group known as the elites, quote unquote.
Yeah, then that's a theory. Yeah,
but let's just look at this objectively, okay? When we are talking about inter-censorship here, how do we connect internet censorship to basic marketing? Okay, I mean, there's no direct connection. Of course, we can talk about how a government might, stop international undertakings from functioning inside your country to promote what is being made in your country. Okay, no call-outs here. Most countries have such dealings. Let's take, we'll not take any examples, but, you know, censorship in this case is not just to, you know, the extent of what content is being put out, but also what products are being put out, right? And
agreed.
If you look at it, I mean, surely we can all agree ki whatever we see on the internet, it has in one way or another, because a certain group of people like it, you are able to see it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah. And
that you know, internet has made information democratic in a way, if you look at it. And if we consider democracy has its own problems, which are then connected to the internet and then connected to directly connected to censorship. Oh my god. Dude, if you see, everything is so interconnected.
Yeah.
And it's so correlated. We never thought of that, because this perspective of, you know, everything being interconnected on the internet, which is not actually the internet, it's very fascinating, to be honest.
Right. So, as I was saying, internet censorship and the, you know, we talked about everything. We talked about how marketing functions. We talked about how governments try to censor stuff, but ultimately fail because of people like Edward Snowden, right? But, you know, the core question still remains, is internet censorship enough? Is it good enough? Or do we need more of it, less of it? What do you guys think? Yash, go ahead.
All right. So it completely depends on education. Education leads to analysis. Analysis leads to better interpretation, right? So that will definitely solve the problem of people getting offended on, you know, not so offensive things, and get the context of things, and probably not indulge into violence because someone who said something on the internet or something. Yeah, right. Everything boils down to the same thing. I'm just repeating this point all over and over again, which is context. If someone has context, the person won't do much harm to the general crowd. Yeah. What about you, Derya? What makes all this issue?
Regarding internet censorship, basically, it can't be solved actually, because the problem will persist completely. Mm. Well, the audience must be aware enough that this exists and it is for their welfare. So basically, it is a problem which cannot be solved, but different mindset can be set.
It can be minimized, but probably not eliminated.
Not closed.
Agreed. What about Aman? What do you feel?
This problem will remain. Like, it will. It might. It could be. Again, I agree with Derya. It cannot be completely removed. It cannot be completely eliminated. It can be reduced to a level if people are smart enough. If people become more mature, if people try to find context, if they start learning about things that matter. So this is the way. So the thing is that, again, people need to be aware about this, and most of the issues can be solved if people are aware about them.
Agreed. See, I have a you know, funny idea. See, it might sound stupid, but what if there was a test that a person has to give before, you know, stepping their foot into this, you know, enormous world of internet? What do you feel? A test that they have to give?
No.
All right. Bye.
I think there is a lot of thing that if there was a test, then there are a lot of people who might not be on the stage they have today.
Agreed, right? There will be a revolt that make internet use. I want to use internet. But these people are not allowing me because I didn't pass the test. How does this blah 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 make sense? And there'll be reports all over again. And yeah, and this doesn't work. If you look more deeper into it, there's actually no solution.
See, there's actually a solution to it. You know, there is no actual problem statement per se. There's only a flaw. And, you know, nothing can be flawless, except when you win a game in Valorant where no team member of your team member dies. So that's flawless, definitely, right? But when you're talking about, when you're talking about censorship, it is at times valid. And, you know, going a bit further, talking about evolved points such as sedition acts. Sedition laws are actually important to protect the territorial integrity of your country. And when you protest against sedition laws, you are actually saying ki you want, you are indirectly saying, not directly saying, not calling you an anti-national, you are indirectly saying that people should be allowed to say stuff that may prove territorially hurtful or hurt the sovereignty of your country.
It's always like you're opposing the statement. I don't think so. They directly do that, because that might fall under straw man if you look into that deeply. But yeah, that you mean that people just oppose that statement. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, exactly. So the whole condensation of this is that you need proper censorship, and when it is applied correctly, mm-hmm. you will get good results. Okay, censorship can be applied in a good way. You know, it is not oppressive to a person. It does not take away the freedom of speech. It simply says that your leader is a good leader. Okay, and I understand.
It takes out the fringe elements.
Yeah, it takes out the fringe
elements. But like, don't you feel like the things the ruler is doing wrong should be known to the public?
Sure, there should be rights to criticize and to speak upon it.
No, but like, I don't think so. The history of the person should be changed completely just to make the people who are voting for him happy. What do you feel?
See, I'm not saying that no kind of criticism should be accepted. But, you know, if you see in history, there are several kinds of censorship where the king might not have been as smart, but the king is always portrayed as if he is the smartest person, or he was the smartest person in the world. So that was not just so that the king can stay in power. It is also so that the opposing parties that exist.
To break it down, the person is using censorship for his own benefit.
Not just his own benefit, but also the safety, you know.
Probably safety. All right. It's like ultimately his benefit, right? After a while.
If you look at it that way, then of course, you know, as we have discussed before, until and unless nothing is, it is not benefiting someone, there is no point of having it. But how should I put this? So
this is actually a very controversial statement giving in that. Leading a history, to be honest.
You need sedition laws, because you need.
You need that 100%.
Because if you do not have those, people have the full authority to go out and say stuff that can lead to the breaking of your country. And you do not want that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is what I'm saying. And what comes in here is that if you, not just about the country, if you're talking about your head of state, no matter how much you despise that person, you should not go to international forums and speak ill of that person. Okay, because that person is, in my personal opinion, okay, you should not you can criticize somebody's actions, but calling your head of state
on an international forum, guys, just to be clear, on an international forum, if you're speaking that in your own country, trying to criticize, that's completely all right. You're actually representing a country in an international forum.
Exactly. When you're representing your country, when you're talking about your country and you talk about your head of state and you say stuff that not just, you might say that you do not agree with his actions and you wish that the head of state should have done something different. That's completely all right. Because it comes under constructive or rather, basic kind of criticism. But when you start making personal comments upon, your head of state or even your country as a whole, at that point of time, this is important, because otherwise your image of your country deteriorates, not just in your country, but also on an international platform.
Yeah, agreed on the international platform. Yep.
Yeah. That's why basically what I say is these are required at the correct places. I mean, again, censorship should be there for news channels that broadcast on TV and do not give out any kind of proper information. Okay.
Agreed.
Yeah, that's very important to have those. I mean, we have talked about this on the previous podcast, and I would like to bring this up again. We need proper regulation of what should be shown to the people. There's so much sensationalization of news that at one point of time, you do not realize what is done for TRP and what are actual facts.
Yeah, yep, we can heavily relate to this right now.
See, we literally, we are not even, I'm not even kidding. We literally spoke for 1 hour and we spoke about things, ranging from internet censorship, which led on to retargeting, which led on to basics of marketing.
Cyber security.
We were literally all over it. All right, guys, we are almost, you know, we are actually at the end of the podcast. We're speaking since a very long time. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, guys, we've been talking about for 1 hour. We talked about we started from internet censorship. Then we talked about how internet marketing works, how retargeting works, how the geotag from your device to another device works when you are in the same, location.
Yep, yep.
And we then went on to talk about whistleblowers, and again we brought it back to marketing and so on. We come back to internet censorship, talking about how censorship and sedition laws are required.
Yeah,
but that brings us to the end of this podcast. And just so the public knows, for your information, this podcast has been censored and edited so as to prevent anti-national comments and
controversies.
Thank you for listening to the podcast, guys. Hit that like button, share it to your friends, tell them, bring out the truth in them. Bring out
the next episode, guys.
On to the next episode. All right. Hey, guys. So, in this episode of the GaiaCast, we talked about the Edward Snowden whistleblower case, and we would just like to clarify that what we have said has been on the basis of information that we have. In case we miss some kind of important integral factor that completely changes the whole topic or whole opinion of you people, we would like you to come forward and tell us about it. Also, what we have shared has been completely on the basis of opinions that we have formed from what we have learned. So, in a case where you might think that we made a mistake, kindly reach out to us and we will clarify about the same. Thank you for listening to the GaiaCast. If you haven't already checked out the first episode on the topic of aggressive and biased nationalism, we strongly recommend that you do. And keep tuning in for more from the GaiaCast. Thank you.